and welcome to another edition of Neil Meets, a celebrity edition where I get to go back over the great times and interviews we have on my lunchtime show with people far more famous than me. On today's programme, we're going to be talking to Betty Boo. We'll meet Clark Datchler of Johnny Hates Jazz fame and talk about his reworking of Shattered Dreams for Ukraine. And we will meet the legend that is Denise Waterman, former wife of Pete Waterman and member of Tight Fit. But first, we chatted with Alice Merton.
I'm seeing pink skies and cable cars. I'm seeing flower bouquets and big round eyes. I'm seeing happy. I'm seeing dancing. I'm seeing problems to solve you can't imagine. I'm seeing you now when you're so happy now. Gotta feel so good to see you laugh out loud. And I'm there smiling, 'cause what a timing. I didn't think we'd make it.
There we are. That's The Other Side. It's the current single from Alice Merton. We've known her for a while now. We've been playing her music for some years, and she joins me on the line. Alice, a very good morning to you. Lovely to meet you.
Good morning to you too.
I've got to say, when I read your Wikipedia, when I read your biography, goodness me, you're a very capable and intelligent young woman. You're a role model for all young girls. You've got a bachelor's in singer-songwriting. You learnt German so you could speak to your grandmother. You formed your own record label and released No Roots as a first single. Well, we all know that tune. It's extraordinary, but clearly you are very capable.
I mean, that's putting it very nicely. I mean, what an introduction. Thank you so much. I mean, I have to correct the one thing about my Oma. So I learned German when we moved to Germany when I was 13.
Right.
So it kind of was more of like a coincidence. Like I had to learn German to kind of survive the school system. But it was also great because my grandma or my Oma who didn't speak, or my German side, she didn't speak any English. So I literally couldn't speak with her for like 13 years.
That's
then
amazing.
Suddenly it's mad, isn't it? Like, yeah, I still can't believe it. Like half of my dad's side are all in Ireland. My grandma grew up in the UK, and so she like speaks fluent English, but obviously the German side, my mom never really spoke that much German with us growing up in Canada. So yeah, so that was crazy to kind of talk to her for the first time. But yeah, like the label and all that, it's like thinking, like looking back on it, it seems like a lot, but a lot of it was kind of also just an emergency solution for wanting to put out music because no one wanted to sign me.
Really?
And yeah, it wasn't like I was like, I'm going to start my own label one day. It was more like, I need to put out music because I feel like this is the right thing to do, but no one believes in it.
I bet they're kicking themselves now, aren't they?
I hope some of them are. I hope so. I mean, it's bittersweet, you know, like I would have loved back then to have an A&R that really like believed in what I did. But I mean, we did get very lucky and we signed then with an indie label in America that just kind of focuses on America while we then have our label for Europe and for other countries.
So. That gives you some flexibility, doesn't it? It really does.
Absolutely.
And talking about No Roots, because it's one which, I mean, I played it just a few days ago. I'll be playing it again later on in the week. I know what I'm like. When I actually read up about you, so you were born in Germany, you moved to Connecticut, then you went to Canada, then you say you wound up in Munich. You say you feel connected to Canada, England, Germany, France, where your mother lived. No Roots really is just, it's you, isn't it?
It's like my life story. It really is my life story. And I'm very happy that that's the first song I put out because that is my introduction to who I am as a person, kind of, or what I went through as a person the last 25 years. But yeah, it really gives me this feeling at home in various countries and cities. And I recently moved to London just to also be closer to my family because they live, they've been living in the UK for the past 10 years. And it's just so nice to kind of be closer to them again. And I really, like, I love moving. I love living in different places. It's just become like daily life now.
Well, you've been touring with Bastille. You've got more dates coming up. Touring must be a doddle for you. You must be pretty adept at living out of a suitcase, speaking all the different languages, knowing what the food is.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it really feels like that. The first thing that one of that Will from Bastille said to me, the first day we were on tour, I was getting out of the tour bus, opened up my suitcase and had to like take my clothes out because we didn't have like a dressing room at that time. And he was just like, glamorous life, isn't it? And I thought about it. I was like, you know what? You're right. But I'm so used to this. I'm so used to packing my suitcase and just ending up wherever. So, it was great.
But where do you think you will settle? Or are you just going to always be a nomad?
Gosh, I think for the next few years, I'm going to be a nomad, but I kind of hope to end up somewhere in the UK. I think that's really where my heart is, just because like it's near to my parents and everyone speaks English here. And I love it. Like living in London, I mean, I only moved last year, but it's been such a lovely experience. It's mental when it comes to like pricing and how expensive everything is.
Yeah.
But I really love to end up in the UK.
Fantastic. All right, let's talk about the new album as well. So there's the other side. That's off the new album. There's been some other singles off of it as well. How are you? Are you one of these ones who hoards a load of tracks and then someone says, look, come along, Alice, you've got to choose 10, 12, 13 to go on an album. And you go, well, I've got 40.
I mean, I did write a lot of songs for this album, but I really feel like the storytelling for me is always key. And for the storytelling of this album, those 15 songs were necessary. And I felt like I could kind of easily sort out the ones that I didn't really feel played a big role in the storytelling. So yeah, I'd say rather than focus on like which melodies are missing or like I was really focused on the storytelling this time for the album.
So you're not like a magpie then? You don't have notebooks and voice recorder things going na 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 and little bits and things which you then make songs out of?
I definitely have those. I definitely absolutely have those. And I do have a lot of lyrics written down that'll probably never get used. But I still felt like I was able to sort out enough stuff for this album to kind of make sense of it all.
Okay. So what happens to all those early songs? Would you revisit those early songs you've written and go, okay, you know, they were written, I've got a bachelor's in this, I know what I'm talking about. But now with a bit of experience, I'm going to redo them, or are they consigned to the scrap heap or passed out to somebody else to do?
I think about this a lot, and I'm never 100% sure, because I'm someone who's very much like, an album for me is a certain part of my life. Mm. It's not like, oh, I'm going to take out that song I wrote 6 years ago and put it out. It's like, no, that doesn't fit in this chapter that I'm writing right now. Like, I think sometimes I think my flaw in songwriting is looking at it too much from like a writer's perspective, rather than just being like, oh, it's a fun song, people will like it, you know? So I very rarely revisited songs from 5 years ago and said, this needs to come out. I'll listen to them again. Sometimes I'll be like, oh, this is kind of a cool song. Or, but most of the time it's mainly like, oh man, I can't believe I wrote that. So
you do yourself a disservice. But so one of these days, it's going to be like when Prince is gone and they find this entire vault with all this stuff and they go, we can be releasing Alice Merton albums for decades yet.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, but maybe there might be one or two that might be fun. We'll see.
But given what you say there about, you know, you write specifically for an album, let's take worst case scenario, okay? Your computer crashes, your backup drive is a little bit dodgy. You take it to the IT guy. He says, oh, this is on the brink. We can save one track. What will it be?
Oh God, that's a really difficult question. I would say, I have to think of it in the long term. Like, what song would I want to make sure I still play for the rest of my life then? I think, maybe The Other Side, because I feel like that song really is a reminder for me to kind of get out of a certain depressed headspace. Like, if I'm feeling down, I'll put it on and I'll be like, nice. Like, it's like a reminder to myself. So I think I would go with The Other Side.
That's really interesting as well that you say that you get depressed and you... surely, yeah, life has had some good turns for you, hasn't it? And you always seem very positive to me, the interviews I've seen, you seem very positive and you seem like an energetic force. Are you enjoying this? That's probably the most stupid question I've ever asked, but are you enjoying this at the moment?
I love my job. Don't get me wrong. I love my job so much, but I feel sometimes that I'm too, I'm a very emotional person. And so I feel like I get affected by things very quickly. Some people are really good at putting up a fence between them and the world, or them and their, and emotions that other people feel, or things that happen in their life. And for me, I feel like there's just no offense. There's right. Like everything just feels so, how do you describe it?
It's all like it's personal, isn't it? It's so personal and deep, and it's actually aimed directly at you.
Yeah, everything feels very intense and very direct and very like I can touch it and I know exactly how it feels. I'll watch a movie and I'll get so swept up in the movie that I'll just feel like it happened to myself. And I think on the one hand, it's great for writing songs, but on the other hand, for feelings and for like going up and down, I definitely feel like I've had issues with that in the past where it's just been too intense. And I think, for me, this album it didn't come from a happy place. The Other Side, yes, because I felt like I was finally getting to the other side, but the rest of the album kind of happened a few months after COVID struck. And, there was someone I was working very closely with who, basically from one day to the next disappeared, and said, didn't want to work with me anymore. And they were like family to me, then going through a breakup, and it's just all these things kind of for me, put me into a very dark headspace. And so, yeah, like I love my job, but I'm so thankful that I can do this because I really feel like this helps me make sense of my feelings.
I was going to say, sounds very cathartic, this album for you, and I can't wait to hear the next one. If you're now in the right place, can't wait to hear what the next album's like. Listen, keep it up. It's great tunes. We love it. The album is out. You're on tour. We love. Hopefully, we'll see more of you in the UK as well over the coming weeks and months and years. Alice, thank you so much. Alice Merton, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
I can't wait to get with you. Get me to the weekend. Yeah, the weekend. I can't wait to get with you. Get me to the weekend. Yeah, the weekend.
Gonna get with you. Yeah, gonna get with you.
Get me to the weekend.
It's the weekend. The weekend.
Gonna get with you. Yeah, get me to the weekend.
It's the weekend.
The weekend.
I'll go anywhere with you. Fridays never feel so good. A celebration, a mini vacation. It's so cool.
Well, there we go. I remember saying the first time I played it that I loved it, and I remember the next day I played it again and said every time I play this song I love it more. It's the new single from Betty Boo. It's called Get Me to the Weekend. It's her first new music apparently since 1992, and I want a bit of a word with her about that because she joins me on the line. Betty, hi.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Listen, lovely to meet you, but I'm going to pick you straight up on this. Even in the PR stuff we had through, you are quoted as saying, this is a song I should have written 25 years ago. I agree. Can it really be 30 years since you last put a tune out?
Well, it is as a solo artist, yeah. As Betty, like, you know, me, solo. Yeah, it is. It's a very long time. It's a lifetime.
That is a very long time. And I mean, going back to those early days, the Betty Boo sound really sort of hit the charts. It was absolutely bang on the money, wasn't it? Was it that things changed and you didn't really want or couldn't see the way forward? Because you've stayed a songwriter ever since and you've written some fantastic stuff, Pure and Simple. For, you know, the Hearsay Hit's one of yours, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I just needed to take time out. It wasn't really to do with, you know, I don't know. In those days, you know, if you were past 25, it was a ridiculous idea to be a pop star. You know, it was like being a footballer or something. You know, your legs are tired. You know, you can't do it. But no, I had some personal tragedy actually. But and I didn't really feel like coming back. But yes, I got back into songwriting and writing for other people, which kept my interest in music alive. But deep down, I think I really wanted to make a record for myself, because eventually writing with other people, which it was a great experience and everything, and I think I probably still will do that. Some of my sort of Betty Booisms were emerging, and artists that I was working with had their own style, and I didn't, you know, it wasn't suitable for them. So I think it was probably bubbling and cooking away. And I think actually, because I was approaching my 50th birthday before the pandemic, I really had to make the decision whether or not I was going to make a record or not. And I just went for it. But I have a great writing partner and co-producer called Andy Wright. And we just we love writing together. We've written 2 albums, actually, and wow. That's how creative we've been. So I'm making up for lost time.
So you are one of the few artists I've spoken to. I've spoken to loads of people throughout the pandemic, and the trouble with people, singer-songwriters and that, is they will go, well, if only I had the time. If I had the time, it's like, hang on a minute, we've just given you 18 months. And they'll go, well, yes, but I did have to redecorate my kitchen. But you've actually really used that creatively. You use that as, right, I'm going to do it. So tell us, this is the lead single off of an album then. So what's the rest of the album going to be like?
Well, again, you know, you said, you know, this is a record that I should have made 25 years ago. It's kind of, I've made a record that's I should have started when I was 25. And it's got that 90s feel to it with break beats, and it's uplifting. It's very poppy. It's got some rap in there, boo rap. It's just a really positive record and upbeat and no ballads, no miserable stuff.
Thank goodness for that. We don't want that. You cheer us up. That's what we want. Tell us about Get Me to the Weekend, though, because that's a heck of a catch. Love Action in there. I heard it and just thought, that is a stroke of genius. Tell us how it came about.
Andy and I wrote most of the album. We got to track 11 and we had to write track 12, and we were scratching our brains and thinking, oh God, we had to really dig deep creatively, because I was worded out. And, you know, when you're working back to back, you know, sometimes you just go, oh, what can I write? And anyway, so we had this idea that during the pandemic, you know, getting to the weekend was like a luxury, you know, because every day felt the same. And so we sort of had this sort of fantasy, you know, that we could go away on holiday and go and drink cocktails or whatever and get smashed. So we wrote this song, and it was great, and I really liked it. And I thought, oh, you know, gosh, track 12, amazing, did it.
Job done.
So we went back into the studio when we could, and we were just finessing it slightly, and we both thought, oh God, you know, that Love Action by Human League, that would really work in there. Should we plonk it in there and see what happens? And that's what we did. And it was magic. It just elevated the song. It just took it to another level, because the bass line is just awesome, and the little guitar bit, the little riff at the beginning is just brilliant. And I've always loved Human League. I bought the Dare album when I was little, and I was absolutely obsessed with it. I think I played it to death, actually. It sort of ended up being a warped record in the end. But I remember looking at the sleeve and being fascinated at the pictures of Phil and the girls and a producer in there, and, you know, just, and it sounded really wonky. It wasn't, you know, it was always out of tune. And so it's great that I'm able to revisit my youth.
Well, it is. You would have been out on the dance floor. I would have been nightclub DJing it, standing there playing. And Love Action was one of those songs back in the 80s that was not really on a mobile DJ's playlist, but it's one of those ones you're thinking, you're midway through the evening, what am I going to play? You stick that on and suddenly you've got a floor full of people and you think, where did that come from? It is a great song. It is a great. And I think you've done a marvellous job with it. You talk about being locked down, but I did see you at one of the Let's Rock concerts. back in the summer. And I took one look at the screens and thought, my goodness, they must have cryogenically frozen her or something for the past 30 years, because you get some of the others coming out looking like they've just staggered on off of AbFab. And then you came onto the stage and off you went. Do you like that? Is live performing still something you really enjoy doing?
Well, first of all, you've been very kind to me. I love it. It's such a good vibe when you do these festivals, because everyone goes there with the right attitude, and they really want to relive those songs and those moments. Mm. And what I love about the Let's Rock festivals is that, you know, when I look into the crowd and I'm doing, say, for instance, doing the Do or Where Are You Baby, people, especially doing the Do, which is a really fast rap, and you know, I see people actually rapping along to it, and it's amazing. And sometimes I use it as the kind of like a teleprompter, because it's like, oh, where am I in the song? I can see somebody go, you know, sort of following somebody else's rapping along to it.
So. Well, I did actually once get famously into an argument with a friend of mine on air, and I said, there have only ever been three decent rappers in this world. And they said, oh yeah, who's that? I said, Sugar Hill Gang, obviously, because they started it, Vanilla Rice and Betty Boo. And someone ran, what about Eminem? I said, all right, but if we're going to talk top three, Eminem stays off, Betty Boo stays in. I've tried, I would never make a hit. Is it something that you practiced on a lot when you were a kid, or did you just natural and the lyrics are there?
I used to practice a lot. I mean, what I used to, I liked sort of cramming words into a line, you know, where you could have a different style, and you know, you can always, I mean, I think anyone can write a rap where it goes, I was walking down the street just the other day, you know, blah,
hang on,
blah,
I'm making
blah.
Notes, hold on.
But that's not very interesting. It's like, it's making use of very maybe ordinary words and putting it into a different style, and that's what I love about and that's how I've always liked that about rapping and writing. Actually, the way I write, I try and use words differently, and and so they don't sound ordinary. You know, I mean, even with the Hearsay song, there's a bit that is, I think it's quite sort of Betty Boo as well, where they all go,
So looking at the fact, as you say, you've written, you know, you've worked with Girls Aloud, and the list of names is The Feeling and all these other people. Looking forward then, are you starting to keep all these songs to yourself, or are you looking to write songs for other people still?
I don't know. I think I'm really enjoying being in this sort of mode, because I think, yeah, I mean, it's taken such a long time for me to get into that kind of zone. Mm. I really want to embrace it and really enjoy it. But, you know, if somebody asks me to help them with a song or something, I'll definitely help them. But at the moment, I don't know, there isn't enough time in the day.
Oh, no.
Literally, I mean, it's like, you know, I'm working and doing lots of promo and writing at the same time and recording, blah, blah, blah. And then you've got family life. You've got, you know, and I don't eat takeaways. You know, I make food every night. You know, I'm like, I have to make something from scratch. So that might take 2 or 3 hours. So,
well, listen, it's great to have you back. It's been 30 years. Don't make it 30 years again. Interesting. And you have got a good run ahead of you, because Petula Clark's got a new single out and she's 89. So you've got
brilliant.
A heck of a run ahead of you. Listen, thank you so much for giving us one of the best tracks of the year so far. And we're only in February. So, and we'll see you at the, I take it you're going to be doing the Let's Rocks again this year, are you?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I haven't got any. I don't think they've made the announcement yet, but I'll find out. Let's see. I hope so.
Fantastic. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you on a sunny day in a field somewhere. But for now, Betty Boo, thank you so much indeed for coming on. Thanks for talking to us, and good luck with everything.
Thanks, Neil. Thank you.
Thank you. for your promises. They died the day you let me go. Caught up in a web of lies, but it was just too late to know. I thought it was you who said they died. Dreamt the impossible, then maybe things could work out right. I thought it was you who said they'd die for me.
Beautiful, isn't it? Isn't that a lovely track? It's Shattered Dreams of Ukraine. You'll know it, of course, as Johnny Hates Jazz. Clark Datchler, lead singer of Johnny Hates Jazz, joins me on the line. Clark, a very good afternoon to you.
Hello, Neil. How's it going?
Very good. All the better for meeting you. I loved Johnny Hates Jazz back in the 80s. I remember when Shattered Dreams came out. I seem to recall I bought it on a cassette single, if you remember those things. And I think someone's got the daft idea of bringing those back out. But it had a couple of tracks on it, and it was the same thing on both sides. You flipped it over and you got the same couple of tracks. But I loved Shattered Dreams then. I love this new version. Is it, when you first wrote it, did you have in mind that fast, upbeat pace of the original, or was it always going to be more like this? Or is it just one of those songs that you can play around with on a different day depending on your mood?
I think the last answer is it, actually. It can be interpreted in many different ways. And that's true lyrically. You know, when I wrote the song, I think I was aware that it could be applied to different scenarios that involved, you know, metaphorical dreams being shattered. But the original version was always in my mind, you know, a track of its time. It was an 80s track, and it had that kind of groove that was prevalent back then. But when it came to, for me to, as a solo artist, to reinterpret Shattered Dreams for this new project, Shattered Dreams of Ukraine, I knew that it needed to be different. It needed to be more personal. And I come up with an idea of doing it in a more soulful way, a more soulful rendition. And that felt more applicable to the reason for me doing this re-recording.
I mean, it works so well if you just run a sort of a slideshow of the images as well, doesn't it? It's one of those things that you, if you're running it as a newsreel, the song would help get the message across very much so.
Yeah, and in some ways that actually is what the video has become. The video is me performing at my grand piano in my studio. But it's been interspersed with the photographs of a Pulitzer Prize winning photojournalist called Carol Guzzi, who contributed her photographs from the war zone in Ukraine over the top of, you know, the song being performed. And it is quite stirring. It's quite emotive. When I saw the final version, I choked up a bit, actually.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. Let's cast our mind back, though, because people were talking, you know, you're talking about this, about, you know, a song which has been developed to talk about a war zone. You know, going back to the 80s, I Don't Want to Be a Hero and things like that. You've always had an opinion, haven't you? And you've always, since then, been very much involved in environmental projects and things like that. You're not just someone who thinks, right, okay, I need to write a song. What rhymes with hero? You know, you take more pride in your work.
I do, and that's really my raison d'être. You know, it's important to me that whatever I am involved with, musically especially, has a purpose, has a point, just beyond entertainment. I mean, there's nothing wrong with entertainment, but in and of itself, it doesn't really do a lot. It can uplift, of course, and it can touch, but I grew up in the 60s and 70s when it was commonplace for some of the biggest artists to have enormous hits with songs that were socially challenging or asked big spiritual questions, philosophical questions. And I think we've kind of lost our way a little bit with that in recent years. And for me, I can't imagine making music without some component of that. I mean, you mentioned I Don't Want to Be a Hero, which was an overt anti-war song. And that I wrote that in my very early 20s, but it wasn't an unusual thing to do. It's like, well, who wouldn't do that? Most artists did that. I think for me, as I've gotten older, though, I felt a growing sense of responsibility as a musician that I need to at least contribute something to the troubles of our world, and hence Shattered Dreams of Ukraine came into being.
Yeah, so indeed, you're doing this in support of a small startup charity called Poland Welcomes. Tell us about that and how you got involved.
They're an amazing charity. I could see basically the refugee crisis from people fleeing war-torn Ukraine into Poland was falling down the news agenda, but actually the crisis is ongoing. So I was connected with this charity which is in the east of Poland, and they literally started when hundreds of thousands of refugees poured across the border when the war started, mainly women and children. And they realized that Poland just wasn't set up to receive them, wasn't ready to receive them. And so they decided to start a charity there and then. They're a group of former high school friends who have all done very well in life, but put together this charity. They now run four shelters where they give people, obviously, shelter, food, warmth, psychological counseling. I've been over there. I've met them. They do an incredible job. And I felt that it was important to help a charity that is not going to get instant name recognition,
sure,
whereas the big ones we all are used to hearing from and donating to. With these people, when you donate money to them, by the way, if I may say, their website is www.polandwelcomes.org. If you care to give a donation, you will know that it doesn't go on marketing, it doesn't go on advertising, it literally goes to the people who need it. So, and that really appealed to me, actually. So with Shattered Dreams of Ukraine, I'm donating all the streams and the downloads and the video plays to the charity. But as we all know, that money actually isn't that great in this day and age. Yeah. So I'm really encouraging people to make even a small donation to Poland Welcomes, even though I know times are tough for all of us. These people are going way beyond the call of duty with what they're doing.
I was going to say, and those of us sitting here in the UK, we've seen it with our response to this over the past 8-9 months, that we do care, we do want to help, and some people just don't know quite how they can. And this is a great way, isn't it? You know, download the song, send a donation as well. That's a great way to do it, isn't it?
It is, actually, and it's very direct and very simple, and it's very effective because, like I said, this charity is they're relatively small, but I can tell you, having seen their operation, they have taken on a gargantuan project and are doing phenomenally well. So it really is a worthwhile thing. These are good, good people.
Excellent, excellent. All right, now turning our attention back to the music. It's Classic Album of the Week time on Cambridge 105 Radio this week, and we've got Turn Back the Clock as our classic album, because I think it is. I mean, it really is one of the best albums of the 80s. I loved Johnny Hate Jazz, and I'm not just saying that because you're on the line. Anyone who knows me will know I love playing your music. You had a great album out as well around 2012, 2013 called Magnetized, and you've had a couple of bits since then. Are we going to see more of you sort of putting stuff out on a regular basis now?
I think so. I mean, I think it'll go between me as a solo artist, as Clark Thatcher, and my involvement with Johnny Hates Jazz. I think it's going to be a balancing act between the two in the coming time. But Magnetized was really our comeback album. We've been apart for 20 years. And I got together with my colleague, Mike Nocito. We made Magnetized, and I'm very proud of that album. That actually is my favourite Johnny Hates Jazz album.
Oh, really? We'll do that as a classic album the week after then.
Oh, fantastic. I love the sound of that. But I think, very similarly, Magnetized has a lot of big subjects on it, lyrically. And but somehow the marriage with the Johnny Hates Jazz sound, which is me and Mike in the case of Magnetized, just somehow works. I guess it did back in the day. There is some kind of combination that invites, a lyrical content, which is, I hope, more thought-provoking. But, yeah, I'm sure we'll be doing more stuff.
Excellent. I mean, yours is one of those voices, again. It's sort of like you, Tony Hadley, and Simon Le Bon, in my book, who've all managed to keep your voices. And that has got to be a great thing. That must mean they want more music out of you.
I imagine that is the case, and you're quite right about Simon and Tony, but they both sound great. And I think it's also, I do think it's a reflection of what's going on inside the individual, and somehow a sense of wanting to continue to contribute, whether that just be musically or, the bigger picture of social issues, as with Shattered Dreams of Ukraine. I think that kind of somehow comes through the voice. I really do.
Indeed, indeed. Well, listen, it's great to have that song back and around. It's such a lovely reimagining of it as well, that I'm sure it's going to really do very well. And as you say, if it's all in aid of a small Polish charity that really needs your help, then it's got to be good all round. That website again, polandwelcomes.org?
That's the one, polandwelcomes.org. Any donation, no matter how small or large, sometimes the regular donations are more helpful than just one-off. So check them out. They're great people.
Fantastic. Clark, it's been a real joy to meet you. Well done. Thank you for the music ever since, well, it's 35 years round numbers now, isn't it? So thank you for the music over all that time. Keep them coming. And we really wish you all the best, and all the best for Shattered Dreams of UK. Clark Thatcher, thanks so much for joining me today.
Neil, thanks for your support. I appreciate it.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Where to start?
we love that, as you know. It's the new single from Tight Fit, and it's called Holding On To You. Absolutely love it. Even happier because I've got Denise Waterman of Tight Fit on the line. Denise, very good afternoon to you.
Hello, thank you for having me.
No, listen, I was in my 20s back in the early 80s when you were dancing around doing all the Lion Sleeps Tonight and Fantasy Island. So it's a joy to finally get to meet you. And you, Steve, you've obviously sort of cryogenically frozen yourselves or something because you all look so young and fit and healthy.
Well, you know, there's magic in our genes somewhere along the line. Otherwise known as makeup.
Well, you're all looking great and you're sounding good as well. I said that because we spoke to Steve a month or two ago. And I said, this new sound, it's just poppy, fresh, modern, isn't it? How do you feel about all this? You happy with it?
Do you know, we are so pleased and privileged to be given such great songs at this stage in our lives. You know, when we heard the songs, we thought, my God, you know, this could have easily been given to Steps or Bucks Fizz, and they would have run with it as one of their top songs. And, you know, we just feel so grateful that they gave it to us. And we absolutely love it. We hope other people do too.
I mean, Sorry, go on.
Julie and I have decided that Holding On To You is a bit of a woman's song, because it's for all those women that have ever had their heart broken and those men that have let them down. They think that they won't be able to live without them. Well, do you know what? You know, if you could see me now, you would see that I can live without you. So it's like a voice for women.
Well, that's
what I think. That's what we think it is.
That's fine by me. You know, absolutely. And you mentioned there Bucks Fizz. Now, but I mean, the thing about you guys is you were huge in the 80s, but it was public demand that brought you back. And you have all stayed together, haven't you?
We have. We had a little gap apart where we all went off and did our own things. But we basically got back together about 11 years ago. And the first gig we did was in Trafalgar Square, London Pride. And we thought, my God, no one's going to even know our song, let alone know who the hell we are. And we walked on that stage. Our knees were slightly knocking. And as we walked out, the whole audience went mad. And everyone started singing The Lion Sleeps Tonight. And it was as if we'd never gone anywhere.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that was a bit of a big act to follow, that 20,000 people in the audience. And then, you know, we went on to do Butlin's 80s Weekenders and Pontins Weekenders, which are all great fun because everyone's there with a positive attitude.
Indeed. And to start back, though, in that way, with 20,000 audience all singing your songs, you know then you are still on the map and you can do new stuff. And you know, Steps have done it, as you say. Bananarama have done it with new songs. There's a whole market for good old-fashioned pop, isn't it? And let's be honest, Denise Waterman, if anybody knows about good old-fashioned pop, it's your ex.
Well, absolutely. He's king of pop. But do you know, I'll let you into a secret. He's not always had magic ears, because when I first met him, this is before we went out with each other and I married him, he actually produced a record for me and my brothers. And then he produced a record just for me. And guess what? Those records didn't do anything. So he can't take anybody and make something of them. It's the right place, the right time, with the right group or person.
Indeed, indeed. And I mean, just dialing back a little bit, though, because, you know, everyone knows you from Tight Fit, but I was going through your Wikipedia page before we started talking. I didn't know, first of all, you were childhood chums with Jay Aston of Bucks Fizz. So are you still in touch, or how did that happen?
Well, her parents were in show business. My parents were singers, and they were both in the same show, her parents and my parents. So we met on the summer season, and we'd stayed friends ever since. We don't see each other all the time, but about 3 or 4 years ago, I was her backing singer in her solo show. So, yes, you know, we've known each other a very long time, since we were about 10, in fact.
So when she joined Bucks Fizz, you didn't get a call from her saying, do you fancy doing this? Because it's all around the same time, wasn't it? You must have been just forming Tight Fit as they were getting together.
I've got news for you. I auditioned with my brother for Bucks Fizz.
Well, and you're here still today, so there you go.
Yeah. But we knew that we were too tall because they already had Cheryl and Mike. So we knew that they were smaller than us. So we went into the audition with bended knees, hoping that they wouldn't notice that we were taller. But guess what? It was pretty obvious.
Indeed, indeed. And also, your Wikipedia page, is really, people always should just check people out because you have one impression. You were a Hills Angel as well because you went to stage school, didn't you? So you could yes. very easily have been an actress or in the musicals and just kind of gone that way. But you were a Hills Angel.
I was a Hills Angel. But, you know, I come from an era where you did a job because you were offered it and you needed to get your equity card. So one of my first ever jobs on leaving stage school was, I hadn't quite left actually, and I was on the Walking on Wise Christmas show impersonating Anna Ford, because the year before they had Angela Rippon showing her legs and it caused such a storm that the year after they wanted Anna Ford to do it and she wouldn't do it. So at 15, I stepped in and they put a wig on me and I danced with Walking on Wise. And then I left stage school and my first job was as a dancer with the Crankies of all people. And I became one of their cabaret dancers. From there, I ended up living with them in Blackpool, doing a summer season. And then I was with a group where you sang and danced. And then I auditioned for the Benny Hill show. I was on the Benny Hill show. And while I was on the Benny Hill show, I auditioned for Tight Fit. And got the job, and I had to go and ask Benny, would you mind if I left? Because I've been offered this pop group. And he said, yeah, no problem. Off I went. A year or so later, when Tight Fit broke up, I thought, I'm never going to hear from Benny again. But sure and behold, telephone call. My mum shouts up the stairs, Benny's on the phone for you. I was, Benny who? Benny Hill. I was like, what? Oh, all right, okay. So I was invited back on the show. But I was a Kenny Everett bit of stuff too. But, you know, it was all a time and a place. People would say to me, aren't you embarrassed, you know, doing that, you know, wearing little clothes and running around? And my answer was, even back then, I'm wearing more than I wear on the beach and I'm getting paid for it. So, no, I'm not embarrassed at all.
Absolutely right. And as you say, nowadays, with your new song, you can always get that chance then. You've got that stage to turn around and go, you know what, that was then. This is us now, isn't it? It must be very comfortable for you now as well, but because you kind of, as you say, you've earned your stripes. So this must be the great bit, isn't it? This is where you really get to kick back and just enjoy yourselves.
Absolutely. And, you know, unfortunately for Steve, it's like having two wives. We boss him about. But at least he doesn't have to come home with us. So there is a bit of a bright side. But no, we are really comfortable. And Julie and I are so in tune with each other that we don't even choreograph anything when we're doing a show, but we know just by looking what's going to come next. But, you know, my life, if I never did another job tomorrow, I've already had too much fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's got to be a book there, hasn't there?
Oh, well, I don't know, maybe. I mean, now I've got five pretend husbands. Not a real one, but I've got five pretend ones that I work with. And I recently went to the Bahamas on a cruise. It wasn't a real cruise. We just went to a private island to do a commercial for Royal Caribbean Cruise Liners, because I'm now a mature lifestyle model, which means I'm not a model at all. I'm just a real person that gets put into situations. So tomorrow I'm in Manchester doing a commercial for a funeral company.
Oh, my goodness.
Of all things.
But what I love with you, you just, yep, and it's so professional. It's just, that's work.
But also I work as a voiceover. But, you know, growing up, I never wanted to be a dancer. I never wanted to be a singer. I only wanted to be a television presenter. And if I've got anything to say to anybody that might be embarking on the beginning of their working life, don't close doors on yourself. Mm. If a door opens and you fancy walking into it, then don't think, but that's not what I wanted to do. Because I never wanted to be a dancer, a singer, or an actress. I only wanted to be a presenter. But it took from the age of 15 until I was 30 to get my first job as a presenter. But all the way along, I was working, but not necessarily in the area I wanted to. But now I get to do it all.
It sounds fun.
Life is really good.
Is there
and
any?
I'm not gonna stop.
Is there any?
I'm not gonna stop anytime soon.
Is there anything on the list still to do, though? You said they're about TV presenting. You've done that. Is there anything you'd still like to do?
I actually would like to do radio. I'd like to do a show called Everything You've Never Wanted to Know, So Never Bother to Ask. So stupid facts that if you did hear it, like, for instance, more men fall out of hospital beds than women. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. Thank you. I shall make a note.
Now you do.
That sounds
be
like,
careful.
It sounds like a great format. Listen, it's been an absolute joy to meet you. And it's so good that Tightfit are back and around. And you're right. There is that huge positive vibe. It could easily be dismissed. And we go, oh, no, actually, the sound is fresh. The sound is new. They're great pop tunes. And long may you carry on doing it. Denise Waterman,
but
thanks.
Of course, hang on.
Sorry.
I've just got to give a quick shout out to your listeners to vote for us on the Heritage Chart. Mike Reed's Heritage Chart, we're number 20, but we need to go up. So if you go to the www.theheritagechart.co.uk and vote for Tightfit, we would be most pleased. Thank you so much.
Bless you. Denise Waterman, it's been an absolute joy to meet you. Long may it all continue. Keep the music coming. Have fun. Enjoy what's coming up. Denise Waterman, thanks so much for talking to me. And that's it for this celebrity edition of Neil Meets. I hope you've enjoyed it. My thanks to my guests Alice Merton, Betty Boo, Clark Datchler and Denise Waterman. Until next time, from me, Neil Whiteside, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.